Welcome back. Mishlei Modern Psychology Part 3. Here we go. Just a reminder, next week is going to be Legends and Lessons. I've already picked out our Gadol for next week. Every first Monday of the month, Hebrew month, we're doing a Yahrzeit share for someone who passed away that month. Next week we're going to be hopefully learning about the Arizal. Anyone has heard of the Arizal? A lot of interesting things to say about him and his legacy, and hopefully you'll join me for that. But tonight, more Chachma from Shlomo HaMelech. And as we've seen before, we've dabbled in some Chachmas. Last week was focused more on parents. But now we're going to really get into the nature of negative influences. We talked about it a little bit last week in the context of listening to your parents, but really he digs in these next psukim. We already said the first one, but we'll do a little bit of a recap. So, Pasuk Tesvav in Perek Aleph. Bini al telech b'derech itan. My son, right? This was the recalling of the parent category. Bini al telech b'derech itan. Don't walk in their way. Minarag lecha min sivasam. And also, don't put your feet in their paths. So, what's the difference between these two clauses? What's the difference between them? They both say, don't walk in their paths. What's the difference? So the first one says, who you're going with. Who are you going with in the first clause? You're going with them, right? You're not going alone. You're going with them, meaning with the sinners, right? So it says, Mina bini al telech b'derech itam. Don't walk in any path. B'derech, not ba'derech, not in the path, but any path. Don't walk in a path with them. Doesn't matter where you're going. However, not only should you not walk in a path with them, but mina raglecha min sivasam. And also, you should refrain from walking in their paths. But not necessarily with them. Just with their paths. Right? So number one is, no matter where you're going, don't be with bad people. But number two is, even if you're not with bad people, don't walk in the path of the bad people. So what does this mean? So we said... Well,
this is a famous song. Isn't it?
Is there a nice song about this pasuk? I'm not. I don't know. I'd like to hear it. I can't imagine it's a nice song. It doesn't sound like a nice song.
What? Would you sing it for us?
No, there is a song for the first part. Bini, 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 al teilech. You know that song? Who is that? Shlomi. Shlomi Cat, something like that, one of those. I think I'd be able to remember if I sing the whole song, but it's the 3 weeks. Come on, okay. Bini al telech b'derech itam. Don't walk in the path with them, and also don't walk in their path. So what's the difference between these? So first, we can just say simply, even if you think you're going to be a good guy and you think you're not going to be influenced, so you're with other people that are going to influence you poorly. Doesn't matter where you're going. You could be going to the Beis Medrash. If you're with these people, you're not going to be influenced positively. But regardless of that, also don't walk in their ways. They have certain habits. They have certain activities they like to do. Don't do the things that are, I guess, unique to them. Right? If you're going to be doing something, so do something which is not something the sinners are known for. But I'd like to say this is more even on a physical level. Meaning the physical reality of their paths. And this is a concept maybe some people here are familiar with, that the concept which was popularized, at least historically, by Rudy Giuliani in New York City, which is the broken windows theory. People are familiar with this theory?
Yeah.
The broken windows theory. Oh, yeah. You grew up with the broken windows or with the theory?
Yes.
Both. Okay. So if you look at source number two, the source number two says, consider a building with a few broken windows. If the windows are not repaired, the tendency is for vandals to break a few more windows. Eventually, they may even break into the building, and if it's unoccupied, perhaps become squatters or light fires inside. Or consider a pavement. Some litter accumulates. Soon more litter accumulates. Eventually, people even start leaving bags of refuse from takeout restaurants there, or even break into cars. So, it depends where you go, I guess. But what does this mean? This means if you walk in a place where there are, you know, hooligans, so you're bound to either become part of the hooligans or to increase the shenanigans of the hooligans. And potentially this is what it means, right? Because the concept of broken windows theory is that it doesn't matter who you are. If you're in an atmosphere which breeds criminality or which breeds lawlessness, so you too will soon enough become part of the lawlessness. If you read these works, if you read, you know, Wilson and Kelling and how they depict this progression, so oftentimes it leads to more of a psychological apathy. That's what it really comes down to. You're in an atmosphere, you're in an environment where people aren't necessarily taking care of the environment, right? It indicates to you that there's a lack of discipline. So you too will be more lax in your discipline. It's not necessarily the case that you're going to break windows, but maybe if your children are running wild down the street, you're not going to stop them. Because you feel you're affected by the atmosphere of just apathy and lack of discipline. So that's what the broken windows theory, and potentially that's what Shlomo Amalek is referring to here. It's one thing to walk with them, to mamish do what they're doing. But then it's another thing to simply go in the places that they go, right? And that's potentially mina raglacha min tzivasam. Don't walk in those places where they've affected those places for the worse, because that will also affect you. Maybe not in an obvious, explicit way, but through the broken windows theory, it can actually have an effect on your psychology. Yeah.
Kol Yisrael Yisraham Kelek.
Okay, what's your point?
And the point is, the author obviously knew that there are many Rishonim among them.
Okay, good.
Yet he said that. He said, except for a few. If we're going to ignore the bad people because of the danger to us, who's going to help
them? So we spoke a little bit about this last week, that when we talk about sinners, we're not referring to the people themselves, but what they do. Right? We say chata'im, right? That's the word of Shlomo HaMelech last week, that it's true, these people have sinned, but that's not making them sinners. I mean, we're saying sinners colloquially, but what we mean is the people that sin. Because what we said last week was, from Bruria, that it's all about making sure that you dissociate the person from their activities in the attempt that they'll hopefully get back on track. But for the time being, you have to watch out for yourself. And that means staying away from these sinful activities one way or another.
That's terrible.
What, Ron?
Giuliani
imposed this in New York City in the 90s, and it was very successful in bringing down crime. This concept of broken windows theory, they used to clean up the streets and they cleaned up the buildings. They probably did a little too far, according to some people, in terms of stop and frisk and things like that. But generally, people attribute this theory attribute success to this theory through Giuliani. Although there is obviously a lot of debate. Once you get into politics, that's always going to happen. But this is where many sociologists point to for this theory. Yes, Steve?
So you could even look at it, a person themselves, when they sin, has to step away from their bad ways.
Good.
So
it's Hasidus Shavard, I like that.
No, it's
a part. And Sivasam, your own ways that are bad. Good, yeah. And that takes obviously a certain type of intellectual honesty about yourself and a certain type of introspection about what you've been doing and trying to stay away from the same habits.
Right, and the reason I say is because even if there are sinners among us, as you were saying, the reality is that's true. And acknowledge the sins and so on, it doesn't mean that we should be careful where we step from that point forward, knowing that sin exists and so on.
Right.
Not necessarily
about people in general, but the existence of sin in all its places. Okay. If we take this a step further, we can understand the next pasuk. Ki ragleihem l'ra yarutzu v'imaharu lishpachtam. Right? We said before, stay away from these people that are doing sins, because it'll influence you. Not only will it influence you, but it'll happen fast. Ki ragleihem l'ra yarutzu. That while it's true, one way of understanding this is, these people are just out to do bad things, and they're going to run to do bad things. Another way of understanding it is, maybe you're going to tell yourself, I can go ben tzivasam. I can go on their path. It's not going to hurt me. But what you'll notice is, ki ragleihem l'ra yarutzu. It's a slippery slope. It's going to happen fast, right? It'll start going from a walk to a run. You're not just going to be walking along with them, but you're going to start running with them. V'maharu l'shpachtam, and soon enough, it'll be quicker than you think, to the extent that you're going to be part of their shedding blood. Right? That's the end of the pasuk, to shed blood. So it's really, it's a warning of the slippery slope. And obviously, we have to be concerned about that, but also, you know, sometimes we don't necessarily notice it. Right? Oftentimes we say, oh yeah, it's bad. We have to watch out for the slippery slope. Right? We'll dabble in whatever area this is. We have to watch out. It doesn't get any worse. But oftentimes, even taking that first step is too many steps. And you have to be careful to give an inch. Right? There's got to be a phrase like that, right? Give an inch. I don't know what it is. Okay. Stuart, did you have something? No? Give an inch, they'll take a mile. Is that what it is? Yeah, something like that.
If you were writing this as prose,
yeah,
you wouldn't repeat the same theme,
right,
again, which is what you do on 10 and 11.
Yeah.
And then again, 10 and 11. You've been reading now. It's not the same.
Right. Yeah. So part of the chavah. So first of all, 2 points on that aspect. Number one, it is poetic and purposefully, right? It's supposed to have a rhythm. It's supposed to be some kind of memory device. That's number one. But number two, as we've been noting, a lot of these phrases, although they're similar, are referencing different parts. So in source number one, we just saw that in pasuk 15. Bini al teilch v'derech itam, don't go on their way. And then the next words are, minar ragl chamin sivasam, don't go on their way. So what's the difference between the two? So we just explained that one is going with them no matter what the place is, and one is going in their path even without them. So there are little nuances you have to pick up. The words aren't exactly the same, they're very similar. So you're right and you're wrong at the same time. It's saying the same thing generally, but it also has certain nuances that he's trying to intuit as well. Yeah.
The author of Mishlei, Shlomo,
yeah,
the builder of the Beis HaMikdash,
yeah,
who in our tradition destroyed the Beis HaMikdash? It wasn't the Rishayim. It was the good people,
okay,
they didn't give honor to
Mishlei. That's a good discussion for three weeks.
Why isn't that in his
right life? But right now we're doing Mishlei, so let's stick to Mishlei. Okay. Source number three. We're going forward in Mishlei. Ki chinam mizora harashes be'enei kol ba'al kanaf. I love this imagery. What does he say? It is free for the in the outspread nets in the eyes of a bird. What does that mean? You have a net, right? You have some kind of trap, and the bird is looking at something inside the trap, and he's thinking to himself, "This is free stuff." What does it mean? It's free stuff. So this is something we mentioned last week. There are different ways of understanding the word free. In this context, presumably we can say that the word free means free of consequence. I don't have to pay anything. This doesn't come at any cost. I'm looking at food on the ground, and I think to myself, oh, this is free food. But you don't notice the net, or you don't notice the trap around it. So that's what it means, kichinam mizora harashas, that you think it's free in a spread out net. Be'enei kol ba'al kanaf, in the eyes of a winged creature. It's a very interesting phrase. Why doesn't it just say bird, oaf, or tzipor? Shlomo HaMelech doesn't know the word bird. Why does he say ba'al kanaf? So potentially we can say, I don't know if I got this from anyone but myself, potentially we can say the following, that the operative warning in this pasuk has nothing to do with bird or non-bird. It has to do with escapability. That the fact that you have wings makes you think to yourself, you can get out of the trap. Meaning there's one level in this, which is mamash chinam. That you literally think there's no consequence that can ever happen from this. The other way to think is, no, there's not going to be a consequence because I have wings. I have a way to get out. It might be a bad thing, and I know it's a bad thing, and it's probably something I shouldn't be doing, but with my wings, I'll get out of the trap. Before they can close it, I'll sneak out of there. And this is another...
You can walk away anytime you want.
That's another possibility. Yeah, you can walk away anytime you want. But this, I think what Shlomo HaMelech is saying here is, even in the thought process of the person who's about to do something bad, they think to themselves, I'll do it and I won't get caught. I'll be able to get out in time. right? I'll sneak into the bank and I'll get out before the censors find me, right?
In the way of San Calphus Clinton.
Okay, we're not going to go into politics here. Okay, so good. But chinam mizorah rashas, why is it chinam? Why is it free of consequence? Because I have kanafayim. Because I've got wings. Right? Red Bull. Yeah. That was your comment?
That was my comment.
That's why you raised your hand, to tell me about Red Bull.
No, because the concept of Red Bull is it gives you wings. It can make you go in a direction that you can't.
Okay. You're darshing against their ad campaign. I don't know. We're a 501c3. I'm not taking anyone down from here. There's a certain chachma to the imagery of wings, that you're unstoppable, or that you're free from restriction, right? And that's the imagery that Shlomo HaMelech is trying to bring about here when he's talking about a sinner. Oftentimes they think that I can just get away with it, or that I'm free of consequence. And then sometimes it's really chinam in the fact that they think there's nothing wrong here. There's mamash nothing wrong. Meaning they will justify it to themselves and think to themselves, oh, that looks like a good, I don't know, cheeseburger. Hashem only said meat with kosher cheese, and he only said when it's cooked together, right? You can always thumb your way out of it. Right? You can always think of some kind of justification. If you've got a desire and you have something you really want, so then you always create a chinam for yourself. And that's in some ways the meaning of the word chinam here also. And in light of that, I wanted to, hold on, let me see. Oh, another, you're right. So this is the Penish Rabbeinu Yonah, something we said before. We'll get to the psychology part in a second. Chinam Yizora. This is from Rabbeinu Yonah. Hadin v'hamishpat hanatoy al masay b'nei adam yamshil l'reshes. Right? The way he's understanding this is that the net or the trap is the analogy for justice or law, lawfulness. Right? The laws that you have to follow. Kasha armuzal hakol nasim be'eravim mitzuda prusha or prusa. That everything's given as a collateral and there is a net spread out, meaning it's for you to lose, right? If you don't use it well. Now, chosiv uparasti alav rishti v'nispas min sudasi. That's in Yecheskel. V'hine, behold, harasha gamkein af kiyam in kiyesh mishvav yeshofet. Meaning the bad person, the sinner, knows that there is law, that there are rules, and he knows that there's a judge. Capital J. R capital J. V'eshe yisav elachto, but the time where he's desiring to sin, v'yachmo ligzov elachmos, he wants to take something from somebody, nidme be'enav ki'ilu kav hadin umashkolos, umishkolos hamishkvet heim netuyim chinam. He thinks to himself, in this case, it's okay. In this person, right, this is in some ways, anyone ever heard of the Heinz dilemma?
What?
Heinz dilemma?
Ketchup.
Heinz dilemma.
It has nothing to do with ketchup. Although I'm sure there are plenty of dilemmas to do with ketchup. But the Heinz dilemma is also a philosophical construct where someone has life-saving medication, but they won't sell it to you for the price you need it at. Right? It's exorbitantly expensive. So the question is, are you allowed to steal the medication in order to save this person's life? And that's the Heinz dilemma. How do you weigh the value of theft and the loss of life? Presumably, it's, you know, if it was a 1-to-1 ratio, so you could make that choice pretty clearly. But this is part of what's going on here. What is the person going to think? In this case, where you have a desire, you'll think to yourself that it's chinam. Levilti yimodu pulosav al-cheko. He's not really going to think about the consequence of it as his action, and he'll justify to himself that there's nothing wrong with this. Even though he knows there's a law against it, and he knows there's a person, there's a being who's going to rule against him. He'll think to himself, this guy got his money in bad ways, so I can take his money. This restaurant overcharges for the soda, so I'll just take one from the fridge. Right? In any way he thinks of it, he'll justify it in one way or another because he wants that desire. Right? He's desiring that thing, so much so he's going to blind himself to the lawlessness of his action. And this is the operative phrase, ki hataiva tashkicheyu hadin, because the desire will make him forget the law. A fascinating, fascinating phrase, that when someone wants something really bad, they'll stop thinking about the consequences. They'll stop thinking about the reality of his actions and behaviors.
What's that next word, Vahashilum?
Vahashilum, I guess it means the peacefulness. I don't know. I don't really know what it means. But there's a book called Thinking Fast and Slow. Has anyone ever heard of this book? Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. Fascinating book. Very dense. Very long. I haven't gotten through it. I finished not getting through it a few months ago. But the parts that I did get through were very fascinating. And he has a piece in there which, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, the biggest chiddush, but I think is very in line with what we're saying here. He says the following, source number 5, mood evidently affects the operation of system 1. I guess I have to give you some background. System 1 is the ability to think instinctively, right? You have a desire, you act on the desire. You have a bias, you act on the bias. But system 2 is more of the analytical side of our brain, where we have to pause and really weigh the elements of the decision. Right, so system 1 is the instinct. When you have a mood, it affects the operation of system 1. When we are uncomfortable and unhappy, we lose touch with our intuition. These findings add to the growing evidence that good mood, intuition, creativity, culpability, and increased reliance on system 1 form a cluster. At the other pole, sadness, vigilance, suspicion, and analytic approach, and an increased effort also go together. A happy mood loosens control of system 2 over performance. When in a good mood, people become more intuitive and more creative, but also less vigilant and more prone to logical errors. So when we're, in layman's terms, I think the way to understand this is, when we're linked into our emotions, when we're being operated by our emotional side of our brain, the instinctive side, the desire side, so we lose touch more with our analytical side. We just let the chips fall where they may, right? And specifically when it's a desire, we stop thinking critically about the things we're doing because we're more blinded by the desires that we have. So he says that in general about our moods and sadness and happiness, whatever extreme that we're on, it hinders our ability to think logically. So another, you know, just general point to pause, try to refrain from that. And he says in his book, it's almost impossible to be perfect in these things, but at least to be aware of them is step number 1, to be aware of how your brain is operating. If anyone wants to read it, it's really a fascinating book, really helps you think, how you think. Either way, Israeli guy, by the way. He did this research with another Israeli guy named Amos, although he calls him Amos, but I like to call him Amos. Either way, another interesting caveat to this, and this is in line with what Rabbeinu Yonah was saying before, and that is that when someone has a desire, oftentimes they'll never let go, even if the reality or the truth is staring them right in the face. There's a fascinating Gemara, I quoted this a few weeks ago in our women's Parsha class, V'hamar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rishayim, evil people, evildoers, afilu al pischo shel Gehenom, even when they're standing at the gates of Gehenna, they've gone through the tribunal process in the heavenly gates, right? They told them, you did this wrong, you did this right, and this is your punishment. So they know what they did wrong. They know exactly what was supposed to happen, and they didn't do it. They know how they sinned. Even then, einam chozer mitshuva. Even at that moment, where they're sitting at the gates of Gehenna, they don't want to repent. How could it be, says Rav Eliyahu Dessler, how could it be that they don't want to repent? They just went through the whole process. They just heard how they did this wrong and that wrong, and they still don't want to do anything better? How could that be? So Rav Dessler explains that their desires are dictating their mentality. That there's a very big gap between what we feel and what we know. And despite our knowledge, even if someone beats us over the head with a truth which is going against our desires, we'll still want to do our desires. We'll still want to give in to our instincts and the pleasures that we seek. So that's just another Gemara that corroborates this concept from Rabbeinu Yonah to understand source number 3, ki chinam mizora harashas, that we think to ourselves that we're free from consequence when really it's a trap. And then the next pasuk, v'heim l'damam yarovu. So this is an interesting one. Rashi feels the need to tell us what the mashal is here. V'hatzayad, in source number 7, v'hatzayadim yarovu l'damam shel ofos. The hunters are seeking the blood of the birds. Okay? So obviously there's something else you could have thought. We won't get in too much of the weeds to this. But what's the nimshal in our case? The nimshal in our case is the fact that while it's true, you think going in and getting the food is going to be a worthwhile endeavor. The hunters are just watching for you and they're going to get you. But the truth is you can understand this a different way also, not like Rashi. And that is that you can understand that this is referring to the sinners. Right, we've been talking about the people who sin that are trying to entrap you and influence you. So potentially, maybe what it's saying here is, v'heim l'dalam yarovu. Heim, the people that are sinning really want your blood. They just want to use you. Right? They're the influencers. They're trying to not only make you behave poorly, but they're trying to use you to behave poorly on their behalf. Interesting possibility. There are many ways to understand this mashal because Shlomo Melech doesn't specify which character in the mashal he's talking about. So the different mefarshim go different ways with this. But if we continue on into the next pasuk, so we say, "Kein archos kol batzei abatza es nefesh ba'alav yikach," that this is also the way not only of people that want to that are out to murder, but also this is that's the end of source number three. Sorry, "Kein archos kol batzei abatza," that this is also the way of people who want to. Steal money. Botzei abatza oftentimes refers to coins because that's how they used to cut the money, apparently. I don't know. Betza means to cut in Hebrew. Es nefesh ba'alav yikach, when you do such a thing, it takes the life of the possessor. So Rashi on this phrase has a very interesting take. If you go back to source number 7, Rashi says, Kein orchos kol batzei abatza, gozel gezela na'e, v'nechmadas hi lo, you stole something really nice, v'chinam hi lo, and you think it's free, v'sofo es nefesh ba'alav yikach. But in the end, it's going to take the owner's soul. So who's the owner? If you were to guess, who's the owner? We got someone who's stealing. He thinks he's free of consequence. And then the pasuk says, it takes the owner's soul.
The original.
The who?
Original.
The original owner. So one way of understanding it is, like Reina is saying, that it's taking, that stealing from somebody else is tantamount to stealing their life. You're taking their livelihood, you're taking their sustenance, so you could ultimately be taking their life. On a very literal level, you're taking their life because you're taking away that which keeps them alive. Alternatively, you can understand like Rashi, maybe Steve was going to say this, that when it comes to Rashi says the following, the last line in source number 7, Nefesh atzmo shenase achshav bal hamamon shegazel mechavero. You have now become the owner. Nefesh ba'alav, the soul of the person who now has the money, meaning the one who stole the money, yikach. His soul is going to be taken. You think that you stole it and you're going to have no consequences? Just you wait. Hashem will get his retribution. Hashem will find out, Hashem already knows, and he will punish you accordingly to your misdeed. You might think that you got away from the trap without being ensnared. But Hashem knows, and He will ultimately get consequences your way. So that's another way Rashi understands this pasuk. It's not just that stealing is hurting the other person, but it's ultimately going to hurt you. And obviously we can go even more psychologically, more figuratively there, and say that it's really about your character traits, and the fact that you steal is going to have an effect on you. We saw from we see from the Netziv last week, right? When Hashem gives to Pinchas, Brisi Shalom, he gives him a covenant of peace. Why is he doing that? So the Netziv explains, because Pinchas just killed someone. Now, it might be true that Pinchas killed someone for the right reasons, but it was still an act of murder. And an act of murder has a profound influence on a person's persona, a profound influence on who they are as a person. So in response to that, Hashem says, I need to give you an anecdote. I have to give you an antidote to your violent act. I have to give you peace. An extra dose to counteract that influence that you just had on yourself of murder. Similarly here, presumably, Rashi is saying the act of stealing is not only an act which robs the person that you're stealing from, but also robs yourself of your own character. That act of stealing will have an influence on you that will go further than just that one act. Okay, moving.
We have a few mitzvahs where we're told to kill people on a lake as a nation.
Yeah, good.
Kill them, and there's no right. Corresponding shalom given afterwards because of the
That's a good point. That's a good point. I don't know how to answer that. But you see it from Pinchas in a very specific sense,
right.
And that's
maybe
the other general sense is we don't necessarily have the same assurance. But you're right.
Pinchas wasn't commanded to do it. We are commanded to
Right, so maybe there's something else there. That's an interesting difference between the two. Could be. Now we have a general, really a general statement, but in response to these people that are sinning. Shlomo Melech says the following, source number 8. Chachmos v'chutz tarona, barchavos titen kola. That wisdoms, right, different, here it says wisdom, but really the word is plural. Bachutz tarona. What does that mean, bachutz tarona? In the public, it will, what does it say here? Cry out. Right, Rina could be like a song even. Right, the Torah or the wisdom of the Torah is out in the open. We'll see in exactly why that's important. Berosh homios tikra b'fischei sharim ba'ir amareha somer. What's homios? Berosh homios? Here it says the busy streets. Anyone recognize the word homia from anything?
Homeopathy.
What? Right, from Hatikva. Right? We say homia, nefesh, was it nefesh Yehudi, homia? Right? Over there it means to yearn, to hope for, to long for. Here it probably means the place that everyone wants to go. Right? Berosh homios, here it says, is the busy streets, the place where people want to go. Tikra b'fischei sharim, at the entrance of the gates in the city, she speaks out. She being potentially the scholars. And they say, Admasai pisayim tehavu pesi. Until when will the fools, here it says the simple ones, until when will they love being simple? Very interesting phrase. V'leitzim latzun chamdu lehem. And the mockers, or the, here it probably says scoffers, until when will they desire scoffing or mocking? Uchsilim yisnu das. And how much more will the fools hate wisdom? Tashuvu l'sochachti, hinei abia lachem ruchi. You return to my rebuke. I don't know why it says you are indifferent to my rebuke. I think it means tashuvu l'sochachti. Maybe it's referring, it's translating as you're turning away from. But tashuv, I think, means return to my rebuke. Hinei abi alachem ruchi, I'm giving you my spirit, or my wisdom. Odia divarai eschem, I'm giving you my thoughts. I'm letting you know how to be better. So he's responding to this, and it's very general to start. Very general, he's saying to them, everything I'm saying is out in the open. You don't have to pretend like no one ever taught us the right way to live. No, I'm teaching it to you. You're the one who doesn't want to learn. So my father always said that my father's a basketball coach. He also likes other sports. And he says that when it comes to any sport that has a throwing and a catching involved, so the first half of the throw is on the responsibility of the quarterback or the thrower or the passer. The second half of the throw is the responsibility of the receiver, right? So when it comes to Shlomo Melech is saying, I've done my part. I've done my 50%. I'm putting it out there. I threw the ball. The question is if you want to catch it. The question is if you're going to be on the other end willing to accept it. And right now he's basically saying, don't blame me. Don't blame the scholars. Don't blame the rabbis or the teachers or the parents for not raising you well. They've done plenty of raising. You're the one who's not accepting it. You're the one that's not taking it to heart. So that's in general what he's saying. But it's even more specifically coming in response to the sinners. Because if you noticed earlier, although we don't have it in our sources, but last week there was a lot of sneakiness from the sinners, right? They're trying to trap you, right? And the Gra has a fascinating take on this contrast. He says in source number 9 on the back of the page, Chachmos b'chutz l'fi she'arba gazlanim hanal, kulam amru ne'erva. They all said different verbs of concealment. Ne'erva, let's trap someone. Nitzpana, let's hide someone or conceal someone. Aval ha'chachma, but when it comes to wisdom, shehi ha'Torah. The wisdom of the Torah, enochein. You don't have to hide that anywhere. You don't have to be ashamed of it anywhere. El bachutz tarona. Berchovos titen kola. It's out in the open. We're not ashamed because when something is positive, when something is a good thing, you don't have to hide it. things that are hidden often indicate that it's something you shouldn't be involved in. But with Torah, it's out in the open. Everyone's teaching it. Every rabbi is willing to teach their students. That you shouldn't be afraid and you shouldn't be embarrassed to engage with the Torah. As opposed to things that are hidden, maybe you'd be embarrassed to do them out in the open. But the Torah should never be something you're embarrassed about. Lo nevosh li'olam vaid, we're never going to be embarrassed by the Torah. It's really a heightened level to get to, but certainly something that we agree with. Now, I started this class, you know, a few weeks ago, and I said that this is going to be a compare and a contrast, right, between Mishle and modern psychology. Oftentimes what we do, because I like to corroborate Shlomo HaMelech's wisdom, is the compare part. Bring up other ideas in psychology that corroborate what Shlomo HaMelech is saying. Here's one of those examples where it might be a contrast. And it's not necessarily a contrast, you'd have to reinterpret what Shlomo HaMelech is saying, but Shlomo HaMelech is saying that wisdom is out in the open. But the truth is, it might not be the best way to do it. It might not be the best to have all the information out in the open. It might not be so great that everyone has access to all information at any time whenever they want it. If you look in source number 10, it's not just me saying this. This is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says the following. Right, the Pasuk says at the beginning of Bechukosai, if you walk in my ways. And then the Pasuk here says that the wisdom is out in the streets. Mahu chachmos bechutz tarona. What does that mean, that the wisdom is out in the street? Pam achas matzah Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, it's Rabbi Nassan, Rabbi Eliezer, Shaya Omid Bashuk. Some people were out in the marketplace. Amar lo Rabbi, Shana li perek echad. Oh, maybe it's not Rabbi Yehuda Nassi. Maybe it's Rabbi Nassan. He just calls him Rabbi, so I thought it was Rabbi Yehuda Nassi. But Rabbi Nassan, teach me something. Teach me a Mishnah. Teach me something that I can learn. Amar lo, lechemi bebeis hamedrash, v'ani mishano eschat sham. Come with me to the study hall. Come with me to the Beis Medrash, and I'll teach you over there. So they say back, Amar lo Rabbi, Mahu, what are you talking about? Go back to the Beis Medrash. Chachmos bachutz tarona. That the wisdom should be out in the streets. It should be everywhere. Why are you telling me to go specifically to the Beis Medrash? So he says, Amar lo yodea at likros. V'ya ta yodea lidrosh. You know how to read, but you don't know how to explicate. You read the words, Chachmos bachutz tarona. That it should be out in the open, but you don't know how to darshan that pasuk. Let me teach you how to darshan. Mahu b'chutz harona. What does it mean to be outside? B'chutz shel Torah, only in the place in the places of Torah. B'chutz can be understood in different ways. Hamarglis hechan hinim karas lo b'shuk shelah hinim karas avanim tovos hechan hinim karos lo b'shuk shelahem hinim karos v'chein haTorah einan el medes el v'asim in drash v'asim k'nesios. That everything which is precious has a place which is protected, that has a place where it's specifically learned, where it's specifically sold. Malkun shemarchivin leva adam. You have to be, if you really want to get the full depth or the full experience of the Torah, you have to be in a place which is going to open up your heart. Malkun shemarchivin leva adam. V'alze amar barchovos titen kola. That it's true. Maybe bachutz tarona. It could be on the outside, but it's berchovos. If you go back to the pasuk, it says. Barchovos titen kol, but specifically in the paths or in the roads where the Torah is learned, that's where the voice is really going to be heard. So it's how the drasha comes about is not exactly clear, but Rabbi Nassan's point is that when it comes to Torah, while it does say bachutz tarona, there is a value in making sure that it's not hefker, right? It's not a free-for-all, that anyone can take it and anyone can access it in any way that they want. Yeah, Steve.
So that really can go back to the first class we did today. It's the path, you have to be careful the path that you're going in.
Okay.
So he was saying the Torah path.
Even on Torah level, there are places that the Torah shouldn't be. So to bring this into more of a modern psychology concept, obviously perhaps the most obvious connection to these, to this concept of not maybe the limits of free access to information is the internet nowadays. Because as maybe some of you know, you can get any information at any point at your fingertips with just a click of a couple buttons. And the question is, does that come at a cost? Right? I love this line in, I think, one of the Jurassic Park movies. It says, they were so busy wondering if they could, they forgot to ask if they should. You ever heard that phrase?
No.
It's really a brilliant phrase, and it applies to so many things. Sometimes we get so caught up in furthering our progress that we forget to think, well, maybe this isn't progress. Maybe this new technology is not always all good. And while it's true the internet has availed to the public an unbelievable wealth of information, it might come at a cost. And it's not necessarily always going to come at a cost. You have to, obviously, with like everything, you have to use your balance and your wisdom in order to mediate it properly. So let's look at source number 11. Both of these sources, number 11 and 12, are from a person who wrote a book about this, which is why I'm quoting him. His name is Nicholas Carr. Many people disagree with these sentiments, but he at least points them out. By the way, he wrote this book in 2008. Right, this is 10 years later, so you can only imagine what he thinks now. I didn't look at anything modern, that modern, but this is modern too. Okay, there are studies suggesting a loss of cognitive control, not only a loss of attention, but a loss of our ability to control our minds and determine what we think about. One researcher from Stanford pointed out that the more you acclimate yourself to the technology and the constant flow of information that comes through it, it seems that you become less able to figure out what's important to focus on. Instead, your mind gets distracted just to what's new rather than what's important. We can see signs of that in compulsiveness with which people become attached to the streams of information that swirl by your eyes. I don't know if anyone has consciously picked up on this, but when you're watching television, or when I was on the internet too, the immediacy of new information is really overwhelming, right? When you watch even a television show, so take notice of how long one frame is being shown. It's usually not more than 5 seconds. There's always a new shot or a new angle. Something new, it's always showing you something else. Right? There's a constant flow of information that we're constantly processing, and we can never focus on one thing. And what he says is that concept of the overflow of information has caused us to not necessarily be able to discern what's more important than the other. Everything's just coming at us. We got this, and we got this, we got this, we got this, we got this, but we don't necessarily stop to think, which one of these is the most important thing for me to focus more time on? Right? There's just so much information, we're trying to get to as much of it as possible, that we don't necessarily differentiate the value between them. Which is why, even in the media or in talk shows, they focus on the silliest things when there are other things that are much more important. Because they just connect to something and then they go at it because it's just something that they thought of at the moment.
Getting cause and effect wrong. We're so expecting, we can't concentrate on something more than 5 seconds. Therefore,
there's a symbiotic relationship. Yeah, it goes both ways. Yeah, it definitely goes both ways. That once the media is in that form, so we become in that form, and then it goes back and forth because the media is going to tailor it to our concentration also. So you're right, absolutely. But that's one thing which might be a disadvantage of having so much information out in the open. You forget to differentiate. You can't necessarily recognize what's more important. But to me, the greater risk is source number 12. But a recently published study of online research habits conducted by scholars from University College London, I guess they name their colleges in weird ways over there, University College London, suggests that we may well be in the midst of a sea change in the way we read and think. As part of the 5-year research program, the scholars examined computer logs documenting the behavior of visitors to 2 popular research sites, one operated by the British Library and one by a UK educational consortium, that provide access to journal articles, ebooks, and other sources of written information. They found that people using the sites exhibited a form of skimming activity. I relate to this so much, and I have to stop myself from doing it. Hopping from one source to another and rarely returning to any source they'd already visited. They typically read no more than 1 or 2 pages of an article or book before they would bounce out to another site. Sometimes they'd save a long article, but there's no evidence that they ever went back and actually read it. The authors of the study report, it is clear that users are not reading online in the traditional sense. Indeed, there are signs that new forms of reading are emerging as users power browse horizontally through titles, contents pages, and abstracts going for quick wins. It almost seems that they go online to avoid reading in the traditional sense. Right? The difficulty people have, I'm sure people can relate to this, the difficulty people have with sitting down with a book, right, and just reading through a book and not having a phone next to you and not having something else which could pop up and take your attention away. it becomes more increasingly harder because we've trained ourselves to just skim through information. Why do we train ourselves to skim through information? Because there's so much of it. Because there's so much we can't possibly, cover and delve into every single little thing. So we go for the quantity instead of the quality. People look at more information, but they think about it less. Right? So you understand, right? This is the forests instead of the trees. Right? You skim all of the forests. You can see all of the trees, but you don't really know any of the trees. You don't know any of the specifics. So when it comes to online information or any wealth of information, it could be very dangerous. If you give someone too much, then you're giving them too little at the same time. Because with the quantity comes a sacrificing of the quality. And when it says, "Bachutz Tarona," the Torah is out in the open, so sometimes that could also come at a cost, that people might skim through the Torah and they won't stop to appreciate it properly at each point. Yeah?
I'm thinking of things Rabbi Tversky said about you want to help somebody if you see something in a movie, but you know it's a movie, so you're trained to be passive.
Uh-huh.
Even in our government today, they can't discriminate and prioritize.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about that on a lawful level. Yeah, but I like the movie analogy because it has trained us to see things that are going in the movie. It has trained us to be apathetic, right? Or to lessen our empathy because we can't necessarily do anything. Yeah, Gabriella? No? Okay. But this is where potentially Rabbi Nassan was responding to the literal reading of Shlomo Melech. Shlomo Melech says to all of the sinners out there, the wisdom is everywhere. Says Rabbi Nassan, hold on. We don't want it to be everywhere. We want it to be available and accessible. But we have to make sure that people are going to go to it in the right ways and in the right times. And obviously, as a rabbi, you can understand where this comes into my practice a little bit more. Every profession is dealing with this. And I'm sure some people have their own examples. But the concept of someone calling you up and saying, "I read this over here. Is that okay? Can I do that?" I said, "Well, I mean, you read it from a conservative rabbi. Does that mean it makes it okay?" Right? Because people don't necessarily process things in the right ways because everything's just available. So they see it and they think it's true. And it's hard for me also. The availability of the internet is something that I also use as a resource. And I also have to be careful in terms of where I read it and how I read it. But everyone to their own profession. You know, I'm sure car mechanics are having a problem now with all the people looking up how to fix their cars without asking them first what to do. And there's also an aspect of ego involved. People don't want to think, they want people to think that the internet has no knowledge available so that they can feel better about themselves, that they're the only ones that really know and no one else can figure it out. I know someone that says about somebody else that they got their doctorate at WebMD. And they always have, whenever there's something, a problem with their children, she knows how to do it. She went to medical school at WebMD. Because, that's what our first reaction is. I don't know something, let's go to the internet. And oftentimes that comes at a cost that you haven't filtered it or given the proper context to make sure that you're applying it properly. And that's obviously something that you have to be careful about in everything, but specifically nowadays with the proliferation of the internet and how we've wired ourselves to always seek knowledge from any source that we can find.
All the books on Jewish law, don't you dare follow what's in here. You better ask your rabbi, because...
It depends on the situation, but there's certainly a sentiment like that depending on what we're talking about. And this is something that, this concept that we should recognize the accessibility of the Torah is something that is driven home by Moshe Rabbeinu. In source number 13, Lo b'shamayim hi le'mor, mi ya'alelenu ha'shamayim v'kachal lanu v'yashmino sabrin v'na'asena. There are many ways to understand this pasuk. Maybe we'll get into it by a drasha or a shir another time. But the basic understanding of it is that the Torah is not far away. It's not difficult to go get it. You have to just be willing to go get it. But it's not so far away that you have an excuse to say, "Oh, no one ever taught it to me." Seshlomach, no, chachmos bachutz tarona. Everyone is saying it everywhere. Stop making excuses for yourself and just go find it. This is also the source for not learning on an airplane. Lo b'shamayim hi. But I'm joking, obviously. Okay. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, If we're going to go back into the pasuk for a second, so he says, "Ad masai pesayim tehavu pesi." How long would the fools want to stay, or the simpletons want to stay simpletons? At some point, you got to grow up, right? What's interesting about this phrase is he says, "Ad masai," right? And in other things, Shlomo Melech says, "Don't do this. You have to do this." Here it says, "Until when?" Why say until when? He should say, "A pesi shouldn't want to be a pesi." Why does it say until when? Yes, Steve?
Because ultimately they'll figure out that it can't be perpetual.
Okay, meaning that they will come to the realization on them by themselves.
As long as they realize that there is a solution somewhere.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good. Another possibility is that when it comes to...
He gave up on giving Moshe.
Who? I don't see that necessarily, but I think what he's speaking to the people and saying, I'm not saying, until when are you going to ignore me? I mean, he's not giving up. He's saying, it's time to start listening. But what potentially he means, I saw this one somewhere. I saw it in a footnote, quoting a sefer I don't know, which I feel bad about, Yitav Panim. I have to look into it, see if I can figure out who it was. But he says that Ad Masai means that there is a time and a place for a pesi to be a pesi. There's a time and a place for someone to be simple. When is that time and place? When you're a kid. You're a kid, you respond to instincts, you respond to desires. But at some point, you got to grow up. At some point, he's like, Ad Masai, you're going to be a kid. Until when you're going to be a child, where you're only reacting to your desires, you're only reacting to your instincts, you're only giving in to what you instinctively want. At some point, you have to start listening to Chachma. You have to start making decisions with a little more seichel. And that's what it means. Ad Masai, until when? Meaning it's fine you started off that way. But now you're 15 years old. Get your act together, right? And Kavachomer, Benosh, Kavachomer for someone who's older. But that's another way you can understand Ad Masai. But what's interesting, and Rabbeinu Yonah sort of emphasizes a point we made before. He says in source number 14, Midas HaPesi, the person who's a simpleton, Asher Sichlo Chalosh V'deosav Mishubashos, someone who is not so strong intellectually, Hisker Te'ehavu Pesi. V'ha'ava Hi HaBechira. This I find is a fascinating point. Why is a simpleton not listening? Because he'd rather feel good. If you look at the pasuk again, what does it say? Ad Masai Pesayim Te'ehavu Pesi. They're going to love being a simpleton. What does it mean they're going to love being a simpleton? They feel good being simple, right? You've heard the phrase, ignorance is bliss. I'd prefer to just live my life and not have any consequences. But the truth is, ignorance is only bliss for consequences. Ignorance is not bliss in terms of truth, or in terms of walking in the right ways, or in terms of making the right decisions. It's just so that if you make a mistake, or if you do something wrong, we can't blame you. That's what's bliss about ignorance. But ignorance doesn't get you any points in the long run. And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says here. Hiskut te'avu pesi, v'ha'ava hi abachira. They did choose. They just chose love. They chose what feels good. Right? You can obviously connect this to things in the modern day. Skipping down a little bit. Ki heim darchi yoshe uksim yisnu das, heim ba'al ha'pulos haraos v'ovrim averos l'malos m'shalos inehem b'inani ha'naos v'ta'anu gehem. So then he explains the difference between a fool and a simpleton and someone who is, what was the last one, the middle one? A latzon, a scoffer. And there are different, obviously the scoffer is an easy one to say that they're actively bad-mouthing something, and a ksil is someone who's purposefully ignorant and doesn't want to learn anything, whereas a simpleton just likes to, he's apathetically status quo. But there's a fascinating Hasidish Vart that I want to share with you, which I think is very important. Very harsh, but very important. It's in Mayana Shel Torah, but I don't exactly remember who says it. Rav Meir Mipramishlan, maybe. The Pasuk tells us in Bereishis, and with this we'll close, in line with what Rabbeinu Yonah was just saying about a simpleton who just follows what feels good. So the Pasuk tells us that when Avram and Sarah were told Lech Lecha, right? So it says that they took with them all their stuff, and they took with them the souls that they made in Haran. So what are the souls that they made in Haran? Source number 15. Rashi tells us, these are the souls that they converted. Sheichnisan tachas kanfei hashchina. They brought them under the wings of Hashem. Avram megayras hanashim, Sarah megayras hasanashim. Avram would convert the men through his understanding and his expression of theology, and Sarah would convert the women. Now, what was Avraham's midah? Anyone know on a Kabbalistic level? Chesed, right? Avram was chesed. Now the question becomes, where are all these gerim? Where are all these converts? You ever notice that when the Jewish people go down to Mitzrayim, how many people do they have? 70, maybe 71, depends how you count it. But then it lists all of them, and they're all biologically related to Yaakov. So what happened to all the gerim? There should be a whole caravan of families which are converts from Avram Avinu. Where'd they go? Well, no, it says v'shivin nefesh yardu avosem Mitzrayim.
But the explanation of that is because it lists Yaakov and then his offspring. So generally, it's the people that came in the home household of Yaakov. Anyone else that came or that went otherwise is not relevant to the family of Yaakov. We're listing Yaakov came down.
That would work if you were only going to look at Bereishis. But later on, when we refer back to it, I think by the Bikurim, we say in the Haggadah, what do we say? B'shivim nefesh yardu avosim Mitzrayim. That 70 people went down to Egypt.
Right.
It's only 70 of our family's people went down to Egypt? It's a tough read. Yeah.
His school fed them. It never became famous.
Okay, good. That's one approach. I'll tell you, Meir Permishlan says the following. You know what happened to the Gerim of Avraham? Yitzchak. What was Yitzchak? Whereas Avraham was chesed, Yitzchak was din, or gevura. Yitzchak was the person who represented tough love, sticking to the letter of the law. This is no more Avraham's happy-go-lucky religion. This is not the place where you come to get feel-goods and warm fuzzies. That does exist. There's a place for that in Yiddishkeit, to feel good about Yiddishkeit, but you also have to have the din. You also have to recognize that there's a certain harshness and a certain accountability to Yiddishkeit that you have to follow. It's not just going to always feel good. And here Shlomo HaMelech is saying that the pesi, admasai pesi de'ahavu pesi, how long are they, the simpletons, just going to do what feels good? At some point you have to buckle down and say that it's more beneficial to myself and to my life and to the people around me if I restrict myself and I keep to certain guidelines. And that's what Shlomo HaMelech is asking. When are the simpletons going
to
figure that out? They became non-Jews, like everybody else.
I learned that after Avram died, as he was getting older, Yitzchak said, you're losing people, okay? The kindness was working up until a certain
point. Okay.
Now we need divorce. So he started a peace corps, the peace army, digging wells.
And there's an interesting Rabbeinu Bechaya that talks about that.
Digging into yourself, finding your own well springs, et cetera, okay? But then remember, so this is when he started attracting a different crowd.
Yeah.
Then remember, Yaakov had the Shvatim had the whole incident with Dina and Shem, and they may have lost everybody.
Okay, that wasn't against their own people, I don't think. But there are other. I'll just end with this. There are other ways of understanding this. That's just one way of putting this into picture of what happened to the Gerim. There are obviously other ways. Rabbeinu Bechaya talks about, like you're saying, that Yitzchak came and dug wells and brought all those Gerim back, and then you have to have a different answer about what happened to them. But you're right. This is only one example. It's just a drasha I thought was interesting in terms of the point Shlomo HaMelech was making. But as you see from here, one of the main things that we're trying to create, that Shlomo HaMelech is trying to maintain, is the appreciation for our own mind. We have to watch out for our mind. We have to make sure that we're not being influenced. We have to make sure we're thinking the right way. We have to make sure that we're accessing the chachma, we're accessing the wisdom in the places where it can be accessed, and we're not going to continue on in our ways of simplehood or of mockery, whatever it might be. So as we see at the top of the page, the theme that I would like to encompass all of these psukim is keeping our mind in check. that we shouldn't succumb to the influences around us in one way or another. And by doing, and the way to do so is by making sure we're thinking about things the right way. We're not going into situations we shouldn't be in, and we're not going to approach chachma in a way which is willy-nilly, but in a serious way, in the right place, in the right context. And we recognize that it's more important to do what's right and not just to do what feels good. Yeah, Shoshana.
Just to play devil's advocate for a little.
Yeah.
Your source number 12 for Nicholas Carr.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a very fair, I don't think that's a very valid research study because there are research sites that these people went on, and anyone that's ever done research for a project,
yeah.
That's how people do research. This is how I did research with the written journals.
You skim and see what's relevant. Yeah.
And I think if you want to, so this is.
Yeah, maybe this one study is not the best study. And people disagree with Carr on a lot of things.
So, and even like if you, I have no issue with anything you said, but even if you, is Google making us stupid? People can use it for if they want to, if they have a doctor's appointment, let's see.
Right.
And they want to prepare themselves for a doctor's appointment.
Yeah, no, there's.
So,
there are obviously things that Google does that are very good for us. The question is whether it's changing our mind. And he goes, most of the book, to be honest, is about how it literally changes our neurobiology and how it really reforms the connections in our brain. Yeah, Gabriela.
I was going to say is as people, I feel like we always look for the shortcut.
Right.
Not that Google's doing that to us. I think that we do that to ourselves, and
right.
Google's helping us make
facilitating
us
that
because it gives us the shortcuts,
uh-huh.
But we learn more about everything.
Right. We just have to be careful to not skim everything, and we have to make sure that we're also focusing on the things that are important. Okay. Thank you all for coming. Until next, in 2 weeks from now, we'll continue with Mishlei. Next week is the Arizal. Hope you all join me for that too. Have a good night and a great week.